Welcome to the WebTalk Guys World Radio Show, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and thank you for joining us again today and listening to us from a variety of different places out there, I'm sure. We're available at WebTalkGuys.com as well as WebTalkRadio.com, and we're heard on WindowsMedia.com and the Real One Tuner, and we certainly appreciate you joining us today. This is the show to hear about new websites and the future of the internet, and we talk a lot about just regular technology trends. And ready to interrupt me throughout the course of the show is my longtime co-host, Dana Greenlee, and she's in here again.
Hey, Rob. Yeah, that's right. I'm your longtime co-host. I'm not that old. Well, Rob, you've been missing from the Loudbox studios for the last several days. This week, you attended the Streaming Media Conference. We want to hear all about it.
Well, Dana, that's right. I just did come back from the Streaming Media Conference down in California, down in San Jose, and I moderated a panel on the coming wireless delivery of streaming media. This delivery to streaming media really relates to mobile devices, and we're all getting these devices that are going to eventually one day get broadband, and you're going to be able to get video and audio on those, just like a regular AM/FM radio. The panel that I moderated had some terrific guests on that talked about cell phones and the global market for broadband and those type of topics. So if you wanted to go see the panel discussion, it was about an hour long. You can certainly go to streamingmedia.com, or you can find it just by clicking to the WebTalkGuys.com site and checking it out. Well, we have a terrific show this week. We're going to step into the world of the Apple and the Apple computer and the Apple culture. We've invited an honorary web guy and Mac Design Magazine editor-in-chief, Scott Kelby, to talk to us about his new book called Macintosh, The Naked Truth. And it's not necessarily a book about Apple technology per se, but it's about the Apple culture and how people are affected by owning a Mac in social situations. And Scott is a real character, but he's also an expert about Mac stuff, and his book is just like him. He is very off the wall and hard to predict about what he has to say about the Apple, but he will give us his unedited opinion, and he's going to do a little bit of PC slamming today because he's pretty biased toward the Mac and Apple culture. Scott, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure.
Fantastic. Well, I have to confess, I'm not a Mac user. I'm a PC user. And and so this is going to add a little spice to this conversation. And certainly your book kind of goes after the PC from one side, but it also talks about what the culture of using a Apple Macintosh machine. But why don't you tell us a little bit about the social impacts that using an Apple really brings to the world of computing?
Well, honestly, because of the size of the Macintosh market, which obviously is a fraction of what the overall PC market is, you're definitely a minority. And people literally treat you differently.
Yeah.
And the best way I can describe it is this. If you were to buy a brand new car, let's say that you bought, I'm just picking a car out of the sky, an Audi Quattro.
Yeah.
And you drive it up to your neighbor's house. Your neighbor might come over and go, hey, what kind of car? Oh, an Audi Quattro. Oh, those are supposed to be nice. How is it? And they're very friendly and nice to you. You walk over to your neighbor's house and go, hey, man, I just bought a brand new Macintosh. They look at you like, what? What did you do that for? Literally, they usually say, like, what did you do that for? Why would you buy a Mac? Are they still in business? Is Apple still in business?
Yeah.
God, you know, I don't know anybody that uses a Macintosh. I mean, immediately, it's the only product I can think of. And when you mention that you use it, it basically brings usually an attack.
Yeah.
They usually look at you like, are you an idiot? You bought a Macintosh? But you can't. There isn't a car you can buy, whether it were from a Yugo to a Rolls Royce, where people will go, oh, I can't believe you bought a Yugo. You're the stupidest man alive. But, I mean, this is what casual acquaintance, friends and neighbors may tell you that.
Sure.
Casual acquaintance doesn't come up and go, I can't believe how stupid you are. But that's the way it is when you use a Macintosh. You have a lifetime of that.
But why does that exist? I mean, I've been racking my brain really trying to figure out why people have such a negative reaction to the Mac. And I don't really understand. I mean, I'm a PC user, and I don't really find myself connected to the Apple very, very strongly. But I just don't understand that reaction.
You know what it is honestly, people don't understand the Mac. And what they don't understand is they think, well, there's a Compaq, and then there's a Dell, and there's an HP, and then there's a Macintosh. They're all computers.
Yeah.
But that's the way they see the Macintosh is, well, it's another computer with a slightly different operating system. But they don't realize the power the Macintosh has over people that fall in love with it.
Yeah.
I mean, you get this feeling like, you found a secret. Like, I have discovered a computer that is so much better than the PC that I used to work on that you can't understand them and they can't understand you anymore. You might as well be using a fish and they're using a computer because it's Macintosh users, you hear this it's all the time. Macintosh users love their computer.
Yeah.
And PC users use their computer.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's because the Macintosh has literally a personality, and it sucks you in.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your comment that you have in the book about getting your armor built up to battle those PC weenies out there. Your book seems to cover a lot of areas of trying to really play up the positive aspects of the whole Apple experience. But at the same time, those people that use the Apple need to have some ammo to defend their case, right?
Oh, absolutely, because you're going to run into this situation where you constantly meet people and they're like, is Apple still in business? And you basically need to have some ammo to say, hey, you know, Apple just posted another $40 million profit. And right now, a lot of computer companies posting $40 million profits. Apple has $4 billion in the bank. That kind of stuff where people come up and say ridiculous things to you. And I've run across it so many times where the first words out of their mouth are the last thing they heard about Apple, and it may have been 7 or 8 years ago. But it immediately comes to the top. So I feed people all kinds of ammo and let them know the situations they're going to run into and how to deal with them.
Stay with us as we will continue our conversation with Mac Design Magazine editor Scott Kelby, and he's talking about his new book called Macintosh, The Naked Truth. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
Hi, this is Web Girl Dana of Web Talk Guys Radio. Now, I have a tip for you out there if you get a lot of spam in your inbox, and I can tell you how to get it down to zero, guaranteed. See, my solution is the very powerful software plugin called Mail Wiper. And it cleaned my inbox of all of those hundreds of unwanted emails that I get every day. And it does it 24/7. Mail Wiper currently works with Outlook and Outlook Express from Microsoft, and it supports multiple email accounts. So just stop hitting the delete button. Do your part to fight spam. Mail Wiper can be downloaded and installed in just a few seconds and set up within a half an hour. There are no monthly or annual fees either, and you can get your life back. I know I did, and I'm very happy, and so is my husband. So go to mailwiper.com right now, and you can save over 40% off the regular $49.95 price, because you can get Mail Wiper now for $29.95, and you can go to mailwiper.com and get it right there. Mail Wiper comes with a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee, and you know what? It has free technical support. That's amazing. So save over 40% off the $49.95 price and get Mail Wiper now for $29.95 at mailwiper.com.
You're back and connected with the Web.Guys radio show, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and Webgirl Dana is here. We're speaking with Scott Kelby, who is the editor-in-chief of Mac Design Magazine, and he's talking about his new book called Macintosh, The Naked Truth, and he's telling us all about the impacts that the Macintosh has on people that use them.
Now, Scott, you have a completely different writing style than what people would expect if they're maybe looking for a book on Apple. It's not a how-to or tips and techniques or anything like that. Now, let's hear the director's commentary, or I should say the author's commentary, on your style of writing, and just so people are prepared when they crack open that book.
The first thing I think people have to realize is it's not a book about Apple. There's like 4,000 books on Amazon.com on Apple or on Macintosh, and I think people think that a book like this is going to be about Apple and the secret inner workings and the behind the deals. It's not about Apple. It's about you. It's about what your life is really like as a Macintosh user. That's the one thing that if people get that, then they'll get the book. But the book, since it's not a how-to or tips and tricks, it's basically like an opinion book. I write a column in Mac Design Magazine called Life in the Mac Lane, and it's just about what your life is like, and that's what this book is. It's like there's a whole chapter on CompUSA and why it's a Macintosh user's personal hell.
I want you to talk about
why is
that?
Why is that? Tell us about that.
You know what? You know why? Because it is the visual manifestation of how small the Macintosh world really is.
Oh.
You walk into CompUSA, and here's this giant store, and every shelf, every row is you can't have this, and this isn't for you. But way tucked in the back, far in the very back
That's
corner,
right.
It's so far it's in its own area code, is the Apple store within a store. This little area of four or five bookshelves that's got, you know, up some Macs and computers and stuff. But the chapter of the book really isn't to tell you how bad it is for you. It's honestly, at the end of the chapter, you realize that because of some things Apple has done, like adopting USB and FireWire, that the whole store is finally for Macintosh users. and not to get sucked into that little corner back in Siberia. Yeah. You really feel like a very lonely, lonely little guy. And it honestly is a certain, it's almost a personality trait where, you know, dude, you belong on a Macintosh.
Stay with us as we will continue our conversation with Mac Design Magazine editor Scott Kelby, and he's talking about his new book called Macintosh, The Naked Truth. This is Webcam Guys Radio. Hey now, you're an
all-star. Get your game on. Do you want to put audio and video on the internet? The Streaming Media Bible is the most comprehensive book on the subject, teaching you how to create, encode, author, and serve the highest quality streaming media files. You'll learn how to produce broadcast-quality audio and video and stream it using QuickTime, Real Networks, and Windows Media formats. The Streaming Media Bible contains over 1,000 pages of crucial information and a CD with examples and tons of demo software. Find out more today at StreamingMediaBible.com.
You're back and connected with the Web.Guys radio show, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and Webgirl Dana is here. We're speaking with Scott Kelby, who is the editor-in-chief of Mac Design Magazine, and he's talking about his new book called Macintosh, The Naked Truth, and he's telling us all about the impacts that the Macintosh has on people that use them. For all those folks out there that haven't used an Apple or a Mac, what really is the distinguishing difference that really makes it such a great experience?
Honestly, and this is going to sound very trite when I say it, but it is a level of simplicity that makes you spend more time being creative and way, way, way less time troubleshooting. The Macintosh just works. Because Apple designs the monitor and the keyboard and the mouse and the operating system, literally a child can set it up and it works first time.
Hey, Scott, tell us a little bit about some of your secrets of the Macintosh and why you think that it's going to be here tomorrow and it's growing in strength today.
There are two secrets to the Macintosh. One is the simplicity I talked about earlier.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But honestly, the second secret of the Macintosh, why Apple's still here after all these years, after all the myriad mistakes that they've made over the years, which I chronicle in great detail, although it's a very pro-Macintosh book, it's often very critical of Apple. It takes a real no-holds-barred approach. But the secret of Apple's success is that it has the absolute largest unpaid sales force in the world. When you buy a Macintosh, you are so psyched about it that you have to tell everybody you know about it. I mean, we'll take me for instance. I bought a Mac back in like probably 87 or 88, my first Mac. I wasn't one of the first guys on board in 84. I was a little later. Well, since then, my brother has a Mac. My brother's girlfriend has a Mac. My father has a Mac. My father's on his third Mac. My wife has a Mac. My son has a Mac. My son has an iMac. My wife has a PowerBook and an iBook. All my best friends got a Mac. I mean, it's one of those things. You look at my brother. My brother's best friend's got an iMac. His girlfriend's got an iMac. The girlfriend he dated before that had an iMac. I mean, it's just, it gets in your blood, and you've got to find other people to share this incredible secret you've learned. And that's what keeps Apple. If you've ever watched an Apple ad on TV and go, huh? That's when you know there's got to be somebody else selling Macs.
That sounds like a strong positive for viral marketing and word of mouth. But on the other hand, that may be a strike against that kind of marketing, because how come you're not 50% of the users out there?
Well, you know why? It's never going to be. Because the Macintosh is built from the ground up to be a machine for creatives.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you know what? I mean, quite honestly, Apple has tried over the years to try to eke into the business market. I mean, they make Microsoft Office for Mac and Quicken and on and on and on. But you know who uses all that stuff? Graphic design departments, ad agencies, and all in their front. I mean, here, I'm sitting in my office today, all right? We've got 16 design workstations. But you step on the other side to our executive offices, and everybody's running a Mac, and everybody's running Office and stuff. It's the front end of the office is using Macs because the back end of the office insists on Macs.
So what you're saying is that really the only person that's really going to buy a Mac is somebody that's very, left brain oriented?
Well, I mean, obviously,
creative.
I certainly don't want to say that, but it's just like a particular car attracts a certain kind of person. Macintosh, I mean, we call them Macintosh people. There are people that are just, they should be on a Macintosh.
Scott, your book was attracting a lot of reader reviews at Amazon.com, and I think you have an interesting story to go along with some of the reviews and the reaction by readers.
Well, it's been very satisfying on one end because everyone that's reviewed the book that's a Mac person has basically given it a 5-star review. At the same time, something that I knew was going to happen was when you make a book like this that's sold in every bookstore in America and on Amazon, you can't keep it out of the hands of PC users. And, well, anyway, I got 3 reviews, all 3 in a row, two from a PC user and one from a Linux user. And one PC guy just attacked me. He stopped just short of mentioning my mother. He went through everything. He couldn't believe the publishing company published the book, and it was just this and that and the other. And I'm like, wow, this is incredibly harsh. Then I got an email from another reader that said, hey, did you happen to notice the guy that wrote your review? I looked up his link on Amazon, and he's the news editor for Windows 2000 magazine.
Yes.
Actually, I was kind of surprised that I'm a magazine editor myself. I'm editor-in-chief of Mac Design, so I was kind of surprised another editor would launch the attack like that. But that doesn't mean I couldn't turn it into a marketing bonanza.
That's right.
And you did.
A bunch of websites picked up on the whole thing, and the traffic just went through the roof. Within the first 2 weeks of the book coming out on Amazon, it was the number one most searched title. And out of 4,000 books, it had already jumped up to the 14th spot. So,
I
almost want to send them like a fruit basket or something and say, hey, it's not too late to write another one. wait two more weeks, then post it.
Also in your book, you mentioned that you have some stories on some of the strange decisions that Apple management has been making over the last few years, and that there's some humorous things about that. Why don't you tell us about
those?
Well,
the best way I've ever heard it described, I went to a keynote speech with Guy Kawasaki, who's probably the most famous Mac evangelist.
We've had Guy on the show before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Guy's great. Yep. And he walked on stage and he said, Apple management, that's an oxymoron. Well, I'll give you an example, something that just drives me personally nuts. I talk about it in the book. They've been making PowerBooks for years. They're award-winning. They're fantastic. You've had everybody from Walter Mossberg from the Wall Street Journal down to your local mom and pop say it's probably the best laptop ever made. But when the laptop is open and in use, which is where you see it on TV all the time, because Apple has all kinds of deals with TV shows. It's on Spin City.
See it everywhere.
You see it everywhere. Yeah. Do you ever notice that every time you see it, the Apple logo appears upside down?
Yeah.
Now, they've done this for years. It drives me crazy. They introduced this new PowerBook, this G3 PowerBook, and they decide to backlit the logo. So now when you open up your PowerBook, turn it on, it's backlit.
Yeah.
But they didn't turn it up. It's still upside down. It wasn't until the Macintosh G4 Titanium and the new iBook that finally somebody, after selling literally probably millions of these, that somebody said, do you think we should turn the logo right side up now? In Independence Day, the movie with Jeff Goldblum, he blows up the alien ship with a PowerBook.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there looking at his PowerBook for like 2 minutes. And the logo is upside down. This is the kind of stuff I lose sleep over. When you have a PowerBook, you're not sitting there looking at it closed sitting on your desk. You're using it.
Yeah, that's true. Right.
The acknowledgement that it was wrong was that they changed it with the new models.
Yeah.
It took them literally years. That's just one small little slice of what it's like to be a Macintosh user.
It's a love-hate thing.
It's you love the computer, you love the Macintosh, and you don't hate Apple.
That's right.
Because, I mean, I'm very critical of Apple, but I am critical about them like you would be a family member. You know, it's like, oh, my brother's driving me crazy, but I love that son of a gun. That's the way it is with Apple.
Scott, you are certainly not new to writing books. You write several columns, and you've written myriad of books on Photoshop. Why don't you give our listeners a taste of where they can read more from you and also contact you and your websites?
Oh, okay. Most of my books, I've been writing Photoshop books on Photoshop 5.5, 6.0, and 7. My latest Photoshop book is called Photoshop 7.0 Down and Dirty Tricks, and it's a special effects cookbook. It's basically just every kind of special effect that you see on TV and the video and the web and the movies, just a whole book of it. I've got a photo retouching book, a killer tips book on Photoshop. I'm working on a Mac OS X tips book right now called Mac OS X Killer Tips. But all those can be found either at scottkelbybooks.com.
Mm-hmm.
And to learn more about me, and I don't know why you would after this interview, but if you're still hanging on, go to just scottkelby, KELBY.com.
And I should mention also newwriters.com. New Writers is the publisher of...
They are my publishers. God bless them.
Yes.
And you're shooting a video now, which will be out, and you do video instruction?
Yep, I shoot videos. I do all kinds of different Photoshop videos. I've got like 18 different Photoshop videos, and they're at photoshopvideos.com.
Well, Scott, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely my pleasure, guys. Thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, thank you. And have a great weekend, and go check out Scott Kelby's book on Macintosh, The Naked Truth. Take care and have a great weekend.
Thanks.
Coming up next, find out how to avoid lock-in and other indispensable info if you're on a website when we're joined by Doug Kay, the author of Strategies for Web Hosting and Managed Services.
This is Web.Guys Radio.
Grab a board and surf the web with those crazy web talk guys right here, right now.
You're back with the Web Talk Guys radio show, and my name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Web Girl Dana. Hey, did you guys know that there are 30 million websites in the world? That's an incredible number. And you probably know that if you have a website, you have to be connected to the internet somehow, somewhere. Well, that's what web hosting services do. And there's about 15,000 web hosting services around the world. Lots of them.
Yeah, and the Web Talk Guys are one of them. We've been serving other people's websites for many years, and it's a terrific business and just a natural extension of what the Web Talk Guys do.
Sure.
Since we have our own servers and lots of bandwidth, we can share that wealth of bandwidth out there. It's something that we've had fun with over the years of doing that for other people. But I tell you, if you don't know what to ask for when it comes to web hosting services, you can get into trouble, and you probably want to know something about how to manage your site and know what technologies are out there. It can be a very confusing process, and there's a lot of options and a lot of technologies out there that you can use. And we're going to cover some of that in this segment and help you make some good decisions about what hosting services that you would want to pursue, and just ask yourself some good questions about what you really need.
That's right, Rob. So joining us today, we're going to get an insider's look at web hosting with Doug Kay. He's the author of a book called Strategies for Website Hosting. We'll ask him about what to look for when evaluating a website hosting service and how to avoid the treacherous lock-in and what exactly is in his Net Detective Toolkit.
Doug, thank you for joining us on the show.
Great to be here, Rob.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background working with hosting of websites and what led you to write the book, Strategies for Web Hosting and Managed Services?
Well, I actually got started years ago before the internet with doing some large corporate networks, and then in 1995, I started one of the first web hosting services.
Oh, okay.
No longer exists. But it was a great experience.
Sure.
Wow, that was in the early days. What did you call your hosting?
The company was called CoSite.
CoSite, okay.
C-O-S-I-T-E. Long gone. I then spent time working with some of the very largest websites, such as Starbucks, Home Depot, and so forth, and learned sort of the high end of the business.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
And then had a chance to serve as the CTO for two .com startups as well.
Okay, so you've been through the .com ride then.
That's right.
Exactly. Well, now let's talk about hosting options and what advice you would give a website owner just generally when they're looking for a host provider, like maybe for the first time.
Well, as you suggested, it's a fairly complex process, and the first thing someone needs to do is figure out where in this huge spectrum of hosting they belong.
Mm-hmm.
It goes everywhere from $5.95 a month up to $100,000 or more a month. So the very first thing is to determine what category you're in.
Yeah.
Are you shared hosting, dedicated, and so forth?
Mm-hmm.
Once you do that, you need to also estimate your traffic. You need to figure out how many hits you're going to get per hour, per day, per minute.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know what kind of functionality you're going to need. Do you need e-commerce? Do you need someone who can help you with credit cards? Do you need special requirements of backup and recovery?
Mm-hmm.
And then what additional services? Can you manage your own content? Or do you need someone to help you with that?
Yeah, and what is managed services and co-location? I know a lot of people know about having your site hosted by some company, but there are other options out there, and I know co-location is certainly becoming a popular one.
Well, if you look at the spectrum, if you start at the low end where most of us live,
mm-hmm.
we're on shared servers,
yeah,
and we're on the same box with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And when we outgrow that, we go to a dedicated server, which is simply a shared server with nobody else on it.
Yeah. It's yours.
It's yours. But in fact, it belongs to the hosting company.
Oh, okay.
Co-location is the next step up, but it's actually a bare-bones service.
Mm-hmm.
Someone says, here's a big room with cabinets and cages and so forth, and you own the server, and you bring it in, and you drop it in there. And they'll hook it up to the internet, and they'll give you what they call power, pipe, and ping.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll make sure that it can talk to the internet, but you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So you've actually, as you've moved up, you've taken a step backwards. Managed services then came in to fill that gap. They said, well, there are people who have outgrown dedicated, but they still need help.
Mm-hmm.
So managed services began as an a la carte service for people who were too big, therefore they needed co-location, but they also needed help.
Okay, so they didn't have a big, like an IT department that can service that server.
Exactly. So co-location began for the very largest customers, but those customers had to do everything themselves.
One other thing that's going on, I think, in the hosting area that's kind of confusing for people is it seems like pricing is kind of pretty much all over the map. Is there any reason for that a person shopping for hosting needs to keep in mind?
Again, part of the confusion is that there's such a wide range of things that we identify all under the umbrella of web hosting. I think most listeners are probably, like I am, have a site that's running on a shared server somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That typically is the $19.95 range. It might go from $5 up to $50, but that's really the range that hundreds of thousands of sites are hosted at. The differences there tend to be based on whether you need certain e-commerce features. Do you have more than a minimum amount of traffic?
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, you know, 90 or 95% of the websites can be hosted for less than $50 a month.
Stay tuned as we will continue our chat about website hosting tips with Doug Kay, who's author of Strategies for Website Hosting and Managed Services. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
When I'm driving, I got a guy on the radio who talks to me. I can't see him, but he talks to me.
Oh, yeah! Oh,
blow my nose at you, so-called Upper King! You and all your silly English niggas!
Under this garb, we're perfectly ordinary Americans.
Years from now, when you talk about this, and you will, be kind.
If I begin to die, please take this off my head. This is not the way I wish to be remembered.
That makes the Pentagon, the Jet Propulsion Lab, and the Queen's Bank at Georgetown, Cayman Islands. I hacked into them all inside of 19 minutes, plus I reset your systems clock. Daylight savings. I got the job?
You got the job.
Listen, hotshot, I'm going to tell you something right now. I don't care for you or for the putrid sludge you're troweling out.
It's really freaking me out, man.
Remember, only G.I. Joe is G.I. Joe.
Damage control is easy. Beating Klingon, that's hard.
My, people come and go so quickly here.
What's a dazzling urbanite like you doing in a rustic setting like this?
Elvis has left the building.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thanks now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
I want to see motion and movement. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay?
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And now back to our interview.
And now, the Internet's future, the Web Talk Guys.
Welcome back to the Web Talk Guys Radio Show. My name is Rob Greenlee, and Web Girl Dana's here. We're talking about everything you need to know to get your website up on the net with Doug Kay, who's author of Strategies for Website Hosting and Managed Services. And he's giving us some great tips on how to stay on top of the web hosting game.
Do you have a way to gauge how you can? You've mentioned this a few times about gauging your traffic and, you know, counting what you would expect to be a traffic. I think in your book you do talk about how you can chart that.
Yes, if you have a website already, you really have all the tools you need in that you can go in and look at your log files. Your web hosting service should have a utility that allows you to see the number of hits that you're receiving or page views per day or something like that. If you don't have a site, you're going to have to guess. There's really no way around that. Mm-hmm. But once you either have that information or you can make an educated guess, you can then develop a little model using a spreadsheet, and that will allow you to figure out how many bytes per second you're going to need, how much disk storage you're going to need, and so forth. In fact, if you go to my website at www.rds.com and you work your way down there to, I think it's /books/hosting, you'll find some free spreadsheets. These are published in the book with the instructions on how to use them, but even without those, someone could go to my site and just download the spreadsheets and use them to develop a model for their own website.
That's awfully nice of you to make it available to everybody, even without buying the book.
Yeah.
The book has some other very specific things that are very helpful. I think you have a chapter called The Net Detective Toolkit. Well, why don't you tell us what that offers a person who's looking for web hosting services?
I had a lot of fun with that chapter.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And in fact, it's one of the chapters that I get the best comments on. When someone asks me to help them, which is my consulting business, with their hosting decisions, I sort of roll up my sleeves and I dive in. One of the things that you can do is first try and find a site that's similar to yours, similar, you think, in terms of traffic and in terms of functionality. then you can say, well, I wonder where it's hosted. One of my favorite tools is from a website called Netcraft. That's Netcraft.com. Netcraft has some marvelous tools that will allow you to enter a website name, and it will tell you what kind of server it's running on, whether it's a Microsoft server or a Unix server. And with a little bit of work, you can figure out the hosting company. It'll also then tell you what other sites are hosted at the same hosting server.
Mm-hmm.
With the information of where that site is hosted, then you can, of course, pick up a telephone, and you can call some of those people and say, I see you're hosted at company XYZ. How do you like them? Because ultimately, there's nothing as good as a personal reference. That's true in almost everything we do, isn't it?
Well, so where is that data coming from? Is it coming from Network Solutions and some of the other register bodies out there on the Internet?
What Netcraft does is really two steps. The first thing they do is they pretend to be a browser, and they send a message to the website, and the website replies with information what type of server it is.
Oh, okay.
They also then use the IP address to determine what block of IP addresses that is from.
Oh, okay.
And that block of IP addresses is owned by the hosting company.
Yeah.
So then they turn around and they say, okay, let's just walk through 100 or 50 addresses in the same block and see who else is there.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the primary intent of Netcraft. They do some very, very important work in terms of tracking the popularity of Apache versus Microsoft IIS, things like that. But it's a great tool.
Doug, just to back up and take a bigger view, I want you to put your prognosticator's hat on. With the sort of downfall of Global Crossing and some of these other bandwidth provider companies, we find that bandwidth costs seem to be going to rock bottom prices. Now, are we seeing that same thing as a value shopper for web hosting services? Because theoretically, the hosting company's not paying quite as much for bandwidth.
Thankfully, we're not seeing the same thing, in that that would create even greater instability, just as it has in the telecom market. The real seminal event in hosting was the Exodus filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, many people saw that coming many months ahead, but it still created quite a few shockwaves in the industry, because they were the largest of all the companies that specialized in web hosting, co-location in particular. And even many of the shared websites and dedicated websites were, in fact, hosted within Exodus facilities.
Mm-hmm.
The bandwidth glut has created, in fact, artificially low prices. So you have the telecom selling bandwidth at what is really a cost that's less than what it costs to deliver that bandwidth. And until the cost of bandwidth is realistic, those companies like Global Crossing will be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
In hosting, you don't have that problem. Certainly, in shared hosting, it does very well as a scalable business with, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of websites run by one company. Dedicated hosting, also a fairly stable business. Colocation, it's a little bit tougher because they also overbuilt. That's the Exodus situation. They built data centers upon data centers to the point at which there wasn't enough demand to fill them.
Yeah.
And then they got caught with something like $500 million in debt.
There's overcapacity out there that they weren't selling.
That's consolidating now. You know, people have acquired those Exodus centers, and there are a number of companies, such as IBM, who have bigger pockets, deeper pockets.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they've actually introduced a great deal of stability into the co-location market. But those co-location providers are looking at how many dollars they can get per square foot out of their space.
Yeah.
And they're saying, we'd like to get more. So they're trying to move upscale into managed services,
mm-hmm.
which is this sort of higher value service that includes a big service component, hands-on component.
Yeah.
We're having a conversation with Doug Kay. He's the author of Strategies for Web Hosting and Managed Services. More with Doug in a moment. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
Welcome back to the Web Talk Guys Radio Show. My name is Rob Greenlee, and Web Girl Dana's here.
And we're talking about everything that you need to know to get your website up on the net with Doug Kay. He's the author of Strategies for Web Hosting and Managed Services, and he's given us some tips on how to stay on top of that web hosting game.
Well, let's move on and talk a little bit about some of the things that a person looking for hosting would want to avoid, and what things are kind of red flags that you would tell people to say, you know, I don't want this host provider because they could do this, or is there techniques that a person can use to help eliminate risk?
I think that the most important thing is to be prepared for those risks, because things may well go wrong. I think anyone who's hosted a site for more than a few years has had a problem. And the first thing you can do is, if you can afford it, have your own domain. Because, of course, once you go with a web hosting service that requires you to use their domain name / your name, then you're really locked in. And lock-in is the thing that you want to avoid the most, because as long as you have what I refer to as an exit strategy, a way to go to another hosting service, then you can solve almost anything. So that's the first thing, is try to avoid that sort of shared domain hosting. The second, other than checking references, if you don't have a clue, go with some of the larger services. There's quite a bit of stability these days at the low end. Some of the larger companies, such as Vireo and Interland, host so many websites, and they have such a large staff that there's quite a bit of consistency to the type of hosting they do. We're way beyond the days of, you know, hosted in your brother-in-law's bedroom.
Yeah.
And that's where hosting began. Luckily, I think in that high-volume shared server and dedicated server market, there's a great deal of stability now, and there's really no reason not to go with the big guy. One of the things I talk about in the book is that you may well want to use what we call a reseller, and that's someone who provides a certain amount of high-touch service to help you, but in fact is still hosting your site at one of the major services.
You know, when a person wants to get an actual website domain name, I'm sure that there are some tips that you can give us on what a person really needs to do to get that set up. And I know I've had a little experience with it myself, and it seems like with network solutions that your email address is pretty important. What do you think about that?
There are a number of registrars now that you can go to, because ICANN has permitted many people to register websites. I think the important things there are to determine who's going to control that. Most of the registrars use multiple contacts. There's a technical contact, an administrative contact, a billing contact. In fact, there's no reason that you can't be all of those. Mm-hmm. Your web hosting service may say, but we want to be the technical contact, so that if there's a problem, they'll notify us. And the best thing to do is really to not allow that, to set it up so that you get the email sent to you, but perhaps it's automatically forwarded to your hosting service so they get a copy as well.
Yeah, because your email address really drives control over the domain name, at least that's what I found. And if you lose a email address that you use to create the account, you're going to have a heck of a time getting back control of your domain name.
That's correct. In fact, there's a great story. In the middle of writing the book, I actually lost control of my own domain.
Oh, no.
It can happen to the best of us.
It was hilarious. I use what's called role-based identities for my registration. That is, rather than my real address, I create a role, such as sysadmin or webmaster at rds.com. And I don't have a name. I have a special identifier for that. In the process of doing that and trying to do screenshots for the book, I somehow managed to link not to myself but to some person I've never heard of. And the only way I could get my domain back was to get in touch with that person and hope that they were honest and polite.
Oh, no.
Which they were.
Fortunately, yes.
But you know, I actually, you know, after doing this for many years, I made the same mistake myself. So you have to be careful. In fact, in the book, I talk about sort of a step-by-step approach to doing that so that you don't get yourself into big trouble.
Yeah, what email address should you use? Because you know, I know a lot of people use Hotmail accounts or those free email accounts out there to set up your domain. But is there a chance that you could lose those, or those could get pirated? Or
well, not so much. Of course, there's a problem if you host your website and your email is on the same domain.
Yeah.
Say rds.com. Well, you'll probably have your email hosted by the hosting service.
Yeah, exactly. So you're at risk there.
Right. So if it goes down, suddenly not only can't you leave, but you can't even get your email and you have no way to communicate.
Yeah.
So there is something to be said for using a third party or independent address there. I think that's a good tip.
What type of service would you recommend for that?
For the email?
Yeah.
Almost any. I think certainly, you know, Yahoo and Hotmail aren't about to disappear.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So there's something to be said for that. You'll also get a fair amount of spam to that address, because any address that's published in the registrar's database is very publicly available. And you'll find that any of the spam engines are out there scouring those databases, and suddenly your traffic will go up there.
Yeah, we've seen it ourselves, so we know. Stay tuned as we will continue our chat about website hosting tips with Doug Kay, who's author of Strategies for Website Hosting and Managed Services. This is WebTalkGuys Radio.
Why isn't this working? Oh, darn it. Oh, darn it. I can't believe it froze up. Tech support. We're gonna have a problem here.
Y'all act like you never seen a Pentium before. The Apple G4. Married to this chick Melinda before. Then started dating the sis Eleanor. Then came the Internet Explorer.
Welcome back to the Web.Guys radio show. My name is Rob Greenlee and Webgirl Dana's here. We're talking about everything you need to know to get your website up on the net with Doug Kay, who's author of Strategies for Website Hosting and Managed Services. And he's giving us some great tips on how to stay on top of the web hosting game. Let's talk a little bit about the software that's used in the in serving websites out there, and there's obviously a lot of controversy that goes into what web server that you would use to serve your website if you have your own server. What are you recommending out there? I mean, how should a person make a decision on whether they use IIS or they use the Apache server, and what's your thoughts on like firewalls and those kind of things?
Well, IIS and Apache are both very solid products at this point. The Apache group just released version 2 after many years of development, and it's the first one that actually runs on Windows as well as IIS runs on Windows.
Mm-hmm.
The real key between those two, there are two issues. One is, do you have any applications that would cause you to use one or the other? For example, if you develop your site in FrontPage, you're going to be much better off using the Microsoft server because that's a Microsoft product now.
Yeah.
If you're writing scripts in Perl or PHP, you're going to be much happier in an Apache environment on Linux or Unix.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have one of those application needs, that's going to drive that decision. Other than that, there's not going to be a lot of difference. What I would be concerned about, particularly with IIS, would be to make sure that the hosting vendor is aggressively applying the security patches.
Yeah, that's been a big issue lately.
Yeah, I mean, and it won't go away. Microsoft has the process of adding more and more functionality over time. It gets very feature-rich, and every time they do that, they're opening up some new problem, which has to be solved with patches. The good and the bad of Apache is that it changes very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get new features in Apache. And because it's open source, you have thousands of people looking at it and trying to break it all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
So, if you want stability, you go with Apache. If you want something that's feature-rich, you tend to go with IIS. My site is very simple. I just happened to move from Apache to IIS just because my hosting service changed, and it didn't affect me at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, Microsoft's really come out with a lot of patches here in the last, in the last 30 days. Because I know Bill Gates put a lot of emphasis on security again. Is there any issues that you see with that?
Well, there are always two issues with patches. Typically, if you don't do them, of course, someone now knows how to get into that system and cause some damage.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with any patch is that they have to be published so quickly that there's not a lot of time for anyone to determine what the effects are on other modules.
Mm-hmm.
So you may well fix one problem and cause another.
Yeah, cause the domino effect, yeah.
Yeah, we see that all the time. I remember when I turned off some feature I had in Outlook, my email client, suddenly it broke something else.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this, as users, we see this all the time. If someone says install this option on your PC or your Macintosh, something else stops working. Well, it's the same on the server.
Is web hosting going to be affected by the growing trend of web services out there?
Not really. Web services will ultimately become just another thing that needs to be hosted or needs to be outsourced.
Doug, thank you for joining us on the show. It was terrific hearing about your thoughts on website hosting and all those things and hearing about your book. How would a person go get your book?
Well, of course, it's always available on Amazon.
Okay.
And the best way to find it, because the name is so long, is to go to www.rds, like RobertDavidSam.com. And you'll see everything you need to know right there.
Terrific. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who is an author of a book called Strategies for Web Hosting and Managed Services. And go check out his book. It's published by Wiley, and it's available in all major bookstores, I guess, across the country. And it's a great source of information if you're looking to host a website. Thanks, Doug. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Okay. This is Web Talk Guys Radio. And my name is Rob Greenlee. And like I said, thanks for listening to the Web Talk Guys radio show. We hope to have you back with us again next week. Tell your friends about the show. Remember that the Web Talk Guys is streamed via the internet 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So if you miss part of the show, we have each segment separately available for listening when it is convenient for you. And I'd like to thank our wonderful and talented web girl. She's also our show engineer. I would also like to thank you for being a loyal listener and hope to have you back next week. I'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.